Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Queers of Time podcast.
I'm Matt.
I'm James.
I'm Kemi.
And I'm Kat.
And this is a podcast to talk about all the gay stuff in the Wheel of Time.
Because we're gay and we like the Wheel of Time. And as always, thank you to Lurx, our fellow venerator of Sorain. So today we're continuing our movie review series with a recent animated feature film, the Oscar-nominated Nimona, in which a shapeshifter teenage girl decides to become the sidekick of recently proclaimed villain of the realm, Ballister Bolhurt. Except that he's not really a villain. And yeah, it's one of my favorite movies that came out last year.
Yeah.
I've wanted
to chat about it for a while, so I'm just using the podcast to bully my co-host into talking into about Nimona.
Oh, okay, so this is just you pushing your own agenda.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Matt and Kat couldn't be here today, and I am very sad about that because I intended to push my agenda on everyone, but unfortunately they are busy with other stuff, so.
That's okay. That's how it works sometimes. I mean, you don't have to push your agenda on me. I've been a fan of N.D. Stevenson for like a decade now, so.
Oh.
And their partner, Molly Ostertag. Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. I've been a fan since 2020, like when the last season of She-Ra, the Legend of the Princess of Power.
So overt gay stuff had to happen before you were a fan.
I watched it before the last season released.
Okay.
Yeah, I got, for a long time, I wasn't really into animated, movies and shows and this kind of thing. I had a whole phase when I didn't got the time to catch up on anything. And it just, like, around the end of 2019, I ended up hanging out with people online that were very fond of, like, She-Ra and this kind of thing. So I gave it a try and I really loved it. And yeah, that's kind of how it started for me.
Yeah, She-Ra is just pretty amazing. It was my first show. I remember that I like really, really just loved how queer it was. Like, it was clearly a kid show, and it was aimed at kids, and that's great. And it was also just like really, really fun.
Yeah.
And it had AJ Michalka in it, and that made me happy. So she's the voice of Catra. She's also part of. She's a Disney.
Oh yeah, AJ. Yeah.
AJ. Yeah, from Ally and AJ.
Yeah.
As a band that I've loved for like 20 years.
Okay.
Ew. I'm old.
That's fine. We're old. So anyway, Nimona. It's based, I don't know, what, I don't know, how do we start that episode? Do we start with...
Oh yeah, so, I mean, Nimona is just based off of a graphic novel that N.D. Stevenson wrote when he was, or when, in, what year was it? 2015?
Yeah, so the webcomic got published from like 2012 to 2014 and then got released as a graphic novel in 2015.
Okay. I remember getting it right when it came out as a graphic novel. I didn't read it as a webcomic.
Yeah, and apparently like he started publishing the first few chapters online and very quickly got contacted by an agent in order to publish it. So
okay.
Yeah, he was still in school, I think, by then. So
okay,
yeah, I've always been. N.D. Stevenson is honestly someone that I'm like is only a year older than me, and if it feels like he has done so much, I'm so impressed by him.
yeah. I mean, I get that. Like, I think he's a year younger than me, and I'm just like, oh, okay. So you just like gone and did the thing. Like, that's amazing. He's put so much queer art out in the world that like I've really loved every bit of it.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about kind of the general plot of Nimona?
Sure. I mentioned it a little bit. Do you want to go ahead?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So it's basically like a medieval futurist kingdom. I mean, you wrote this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it, but like you can, like, I don't want...
Yeah, I'll read it.
I have a bunch of notes, but we don't have to...
Okay. So in a medieval futuristic kingdom, Ballister Bolhurt is the first commoner to become a knight after 1,000 years... graduating from the Institute for Elite Knights, which protects the kingdom against monsters outside its outer wall. But during the knighting ceremony, the kingdom's queen is murdered and Ballister is framed for it, losing an arm in the process. As he barely manages to escape and wants to clear his name, Ballister meets Nimona, a teenage outcast who has faced persecution for her shape-shifting abilities and now wants to be his sidekick.
Yeah. And it's hilarious. It's such a fun movie. And also it goes so deep. And the last third of it is so dark, actually.
Yeah, I think... So I mentioned this before we started recording, but I've seen Nimona twice before. But I only had an hour before this recording to like prep for it. So I watched the first half hour and then the last half hour. And I was like, oh, that's a tone shift.
Yeah. And it's, I think like the genesis of the movie is also kind quite interesting because it's that movie almost never got released because at first it was Fox who had the rights and one of its studio, Blue Sky, was producing the movie. And then Disney bought Fox and Disney didn't really like the movie. Like they wanted to push back a lot on the queer content in it.
Yeah, well, fuck Disney.
Fuck Disney. It's Oscar nominated. Fuck you, Disney. Take that.
Yeah, it's still, it's, yeah. Like, it's a very successful show, so kindly fuck off, Disney.
Yeah, kindly. And then, like, Disney basically shut down the studio that was producing Nimona. Mm-hmm. So they had to find a new studio to, like, a new source of funding. And I think who ended up funding it was Annapurna Pictures, who is funded by Megan Ellison. Basically, like, the daughter of a billionaire, the billionaire that founded Oracle.
Okay.
Yeah, Oracle. I don't know how you say that in English.
That founded... I was pretending to know what you said. What did you say? Annapurna?
It's the founder of...
Oracle.
Oracle, yeah. Big tech company.
Yeah. Yeah, the vision, or the AR? Alternate reality stuff?
No, they do a lot of, I don't even remember what Oracle do. It's computer software companies. They've been working, like, they've been doing a bunch of things since, like, 2000
something. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's,
okay, somehow it's apparently the third largest software company in the world by revenue and market capitalization.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, well, cool.
It's, yeah. And anyway, so it's someone who got a lot of money from daddy. And she's like, I'm going to fund movies and I'm going to fund that queer movie specifically.
Daddy, give me money.
I'm like, so you know what? Trust babies are fine as long as there's enough diversity with them, I guess.
I mean, I will say one of my points was like the amount of diversity within this movie was great. So it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it's... I think it's interesting to see how that movie got funded because, like, pretty much all of the big company just didn't want to take it on.
Right.
Like, Disney said no. It had to be, like, a very small studio that, like, it's a passion project in a way.
Yeah.
Founded by someone who had enough money to make it, like, go to the finish line. And yeah, so like when Nimona came out, there was a few articles about, you know, the whole process of the movie. And there was also some article when they were mentioning, oh, like when they were writing the movie, for a while they were wondering whether they could actually handle a third act that was very dark and whether they should like lighten it up to match the rest of the movie. And like Ellison, like the founder of the studio that took over, was like, well, trust your instinct. Do you think it would go well with more joke or not? So they just went with their first instinct to, no, keep the subject dark because it's a dark thing and it's...
Right.
It works well within that movie.
Yeah, no, I think it's really, really good in how it, like, shows the... It shows the depths of... morality in a very surface level way that can lead to a lot of like more discussion. So like it's approachable, but it's also very deep.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to like say it without going into like too many spoilers, but like there's a whole bunch of like existentialist stuff in here.
I think we can go into spoilers because, okay. I mean,
we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. Is that something you want to start with?
Oh, I mean, I was just going to start with like what it means to be a villain. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you had that in your notes. I didn't have a chance to take a look, but
I had some stuff, but get it going.
Yeah, I mean, if someone is treated as a villain and they're forced to survive that way, especially if they're some kind of like immortal being, like they're forced to survive in a world where they are an outcast. So could anyone resist becoming that archetype? Like, that's my thing, is I don't think anyone could. Like, we don't know kind of what happened before Gloreth. And we don't know what happened after, in the 1,000 years after Gloreth, until, like, the events of this movie. That must have been really hard on Nimona. Like, yeah. That's psychological torture, kind of.
Like, we have a basic idea of what happened before Gloreth, because what we found out towards the end of the movie is that Nimona is the monster that resulting in that kingdom being founded with that big wall around and that Knight Institute that is solely designed to fight the monster from the outside world.
Right.
Like, those big bad monsters that they all, basically, they're all being scared of something they have no clue about because they haven't looked outside for 1,000 years.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I'm like, what kind of happened before the 1,000 years of Nimona? Like, what am I getting at? Before Nimona, or before Gloreth, like, what was Nimona doing? Like, her life seemed pretty sad, but also, like, she wasn't a villain.
No, she was just trying to find...
Friendship never ends.
Like, we see a little bit with... there's this moment where we see her trying to talk to other birds, trying to talk with other deers, trying to to fit with other groups. And all the time being rejected. And then she finds this little girl, Gloreth, that, like, they get to play with for a while... and at first, Nimona doesn't shapeshift with her. And then at some point she does because she doesn't realize that it's a bad thing and that people could be scared of. And at first, Gloreth accepts her because she's a kid. She doesn't see how that is bad. The friend just has some cool powers.
Right. And I think that's part of it is, like, I had a hard time disliking Gloreth because Gloreth is pretty... There's a lot of Galadriel in Gloreth.
She's just a kid.
I know, but Gloreth is kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
Even though she's a kid.
But what happened is that her parents and the rest of the village find out about Nimona's power and immediately start being scared of because at first, like, they see Nimona as a bear, I think she is at that moment.
Yeah, they see her. Yeah.
Playing with Gloreth. So a threatening beast playing with a kid. And then found out that it's like a shapeshifter, so a monster. And basically they attack Nimona and like Nimona keeps shapeshifting and that results in the village burning, but it's solely the fault of the villager. But as a result, like as a kid, you kind of see Nimona doing the things that the adults are saying she's a bad person for.
Right. I mean, it's all about perception because...
Yeah.
And also, like, history is written by the victors and Nimona is clearly not a victor in this situation. I don't even know if Gloreth was the victor in this situation.
No, like, especially, like, for example, I don't blame Gloreth for rejecting Nimona because when you look at what happened 1,000 years later, when Ballister learns about Nimona being the monster from his story, he immediately rejects her when he's been spending so much time with her and should know better.
Right.
And he's an adult.
Right. And I think I have a hard time with that because I'm just such, like, a radical acceptance type of person. That for me, I'm just like, okay, cool. Well, she's clearly shown her character, so why are you still persecuting her? But also those ingrained prejudices are so hard to get rid of. Like when Ballister drew his sword against her, or started to, that was really sad.
Yeah, that broke my heart. And especially since like the movie does a great job, I think, showing how Ballister is progressively shifting its mindset regarding Nimona as a shapeshifter. Because at first he's like, he's scared because he doesn't understand the shape-shifting things and he's very much like in the mindset of, oh, Nimona is a monster, so that's not a good thing.
Right.
And then he switched to the, can you just be a human so it would be easier? And
right.
Which is as a queer person, the can you just be normal for a second is kind of a slap.
Right. I mean, I think, I don't know. It's really hard for me to watch those scenes because it's so much of it is just sad. And I don't know how to like process sad.
Yeah, it's there's a few quotes that I mentioned, like that I put in the doc, right? The movie talks a lot about what it means to be normal and what is normal and for who.
Right.
Like, is that just so that other people feel better about themselves, or it's really just about having to conform to society's requirements, for example.
Right. Normal is defined by society, and society is a like societal construct in itself. So
yeah. So we go, like, we really go for a moment where Ballista is like, can you just be you, please? Like, I don't follow girl you, but I'm not a girl, I'm a shark.
Right.
To, like, at some point he wants her to shift, but only when it's convenient. So, like, you want me to shift, you don't want me to shift, pick a lane, which I like to.
Right.
But at some point he just evolves a bit and kind of asks her, like, what's happening when she doesn't shift.
Right, like, it's kind of made implicit by that her default shape. Here, let me see. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it. Like, her default shape is that girl shape or that typically feminine shape, but she doesn't identify as a girl. Like, she doesn't seem to have a gender, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And because at one point Ballister is like, put it into your girl shape. I'm not a girl. I'm a shark. Like, that's just a very quick fuck you to gender, which I really, really love. And also, like, it's just cool to be a genderless being, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm biased.
There was also a moment where Ballista was like, and no, you're a boy. I am today.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so cool. Like, it's like, it's just a shape for her, but that doesn't change who she is. And she doesn't define herself by, like neither a gender nor, like, a specific form, a specific shape. Because even, like, the shape we see her during most of the movie as, like, Nimona as that teenage girl with the short hair and this kind of thing, it's not even the shape that she was using when she first met Glorith.
Right.
And it's a shape that she still does, she still goes back to sometimes.
Right. I think I'm curious about, like, the age thing, because, like, if she was a girl when she met, like, she was, like, a girl of, like, what, like, 6 to 7, maybe 8-ish when she met Glorith? I don't know how.
I mean, I think she just took a shape that looked similar to the person in front of her.
That's true. Okay, that makes sense. Because I was like, is she aging? If so, she's going to live for, like... Oops. She's going to live for, like, 15,000 years. Or... That was another thing, was, like, how old is Nimona? We don't know.
I think she's going to stay here forever. She's a goddess.
Yeah. I think she's, like, part of the world.
Yeah. And she's just trying to make sense of it, I guess, and to find other people so she's not lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because at the end of it, like, that's also why she went to see Ballista in the first place. It's because she's been rejected by everyone since, like, the start, that now she sees that person that the whole society rejects and is like,
right.
Yeah, maybe we could go along and also do chaotic things because she likes chaos.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, as a being, she's pretty young, or, like, she just has the attitude of someone young because... She's like she wants to learn to be a villain or something, and her whole thing is being a sidekick when she clearly has the potential to be a villain, but I don't think it's really villainy that she's after. I think it's just that's kind of what she's been trained to do, slash how she's been perceived, slash I don't know. I don't know how to...
Yeah.
Her motivations are very interesting to me because I don't, and I want to just take it as, for, like, surface level, which is really like what it is. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah, whether there's a motivation or not, whether she's it's just loneliness. I think like there's also deeply like she despises that the system, the whole institute, the whole kingdom, because like she knows that their origin is bullshit.
Right. Go back to the shadows from whence you came is such a, like, it's a Galadriel line.
Yes.
Galadriel says, go back to the void from whence you came. And I'm just like, it makes my heart happy, but I don't like that it's being said by a villain. Multiple villains.
Multiple villains, yeah.
Because I think what Glorath chose to be afterwards makes her a villain. But in that moment, I don't think she's the villain.
Yeah, but like, you know, I'm so curious about how that kingdom was founded because she's too young to found a kingdom.
Right. I think it had to have happened when she was an adult.
So was she the founding member or was that like the village after the fight that decided to build a wall and...
Then it just grew from there.
And then it just grew from there.
Or is it like a Jesus situation and Glorath never really existed? Or Glorath was just a person that they had a council about in 350 AD and were like, well, Glorath is our chosen one.
Maybe. Maybe. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. The world may never know. I don't think the world is meant to know.
Yeah. And I think one thing that is interesting about that movie is that the whole part with Glorath and like this kingdom and the origin of the kingdom is something that is completely invented for the movie. That's not something that was part of the graphic novel originally.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have not read the graphic novel. I have owned it for almost a decade. I have not read it.
Really? I think I bought it like back in 2020 and ended up reading it like 2 years ago. So
yeah, I have owned it since it came out. I think I skimmed through it a little bit, or it's been so long that I can't remember anything about it. But
so from what I remember, there's still this premise of like Nimona finding Ballister and wanting to be his sidekick. Ballister is a lot more of a villain in the comic, even if he was wronged by the Institute, but he has a desire of revenge.
Right.
When in the movie, it's really about proving that he's not a bad person.
Right. Does the same event happen? Like, his sword still kills the queen and stuff?
No, I think apparently there's a night shoot. I don't know, like, you know, those, I don't know how to say that in English, but you know the thing where knights are on a horse and they have lance?
Joust.
That's how you say that. And he was fighting Ambrosius.
Okay.
Who is still his lover, kind of, in the books.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the director of the Institute made a deal with Ambrosius to swap his lance so that it would explode on Ballister. And Ballister lost an arm because of that and then got expelled from the academy for, like, some bullshit reason.
Right. Okay.
So it was, yeah, it was a bit different.
But the meat of it is still kind of the same, or?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. It's still being wronged by the Institute. Ambrosius still has a role in chopping his arm off, which is not a love language, as the movie repeats multiple times.
Chopping people's arms off is a love language. It's just not my love language.
Arm chopping is not a love language.
Yeah, yeah. There were so many good one-liners in here.
Yeah. It's like, which one I had said? When Nimona meets Ambrosius for the first time, and Ballister is like, Ambrosius, and Nimona immediately answers, Gesundheit.
Right.
Because that name is so weird. That made me laugh.
Yeah. Ambrosius Golden Loin is a very odd, hilarious name.
Yeah, all of the names are pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, what's the name of Ballister again? It's Ballister Boldheart.
Yeah, they're all, like, very fantasy.
Yeah.
I also like the idea of, like, a high-tech fantasy world.
Yeah.
Like, because that, I can't think of a time that I've seen something like that before, but I don't know.
I don't remember either.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fun mix to see, like, flying knights with steel crossbow, but fancier crossbows. It's like they had part of the technology and other part of the technology. They had, like, television and,
right,
like, social media, and they had YouTube. And
I think it was because, like, they just chose as a society not to use technology for weapons. And that's...
Oh, they definitely use technology as weapons because, right, their swords are fancy and crossbow and, like...
But maybe not, like, nuclear.
They don't have maybe gun power.
Yeah, they don't have, like, nuclear... They never discovered nuclear power. They never discovered, like, gunpowder, like...
Yeah.
Or maybe they know those things, but they're like, no, those are bad. And I'm like, cool. Those are bad.
Yeah. And they're still wearing fancy armors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the aesthetic of that movie for that.
Yeah.
I was thinking about something and then I forgot. Says a miscreant whispering in his ear. Says that while whispering in Ambrose's ear. The director has some fun lines also.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because that movie goes dark and I still find it kind of comforting to me.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to I can't remember the name of the actor that I love, or the Todd. I think Todd had my favorite one-liners. He's so dumb.
He has a punchable face.
He's a Chad.
Yeah, he's a bully, he's dumb, he has some fun lines, and yeah.
Let me just hear. I'm just going to pull up some of my favorite movie quotes. Like, Nimona, I think, has the best, but, like, I love the secret lair. The garbage and smell of sadness really pulled the whole thing together.
Oh, yes.
What is it? Yeah, once everyone sees you as a villain, that's what you are. They only see you one way, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah. And then it kind of gets reversed later on because there's a scene where they try to convince Ambrosius that Ballister is not guilty by showing him a video, but the video gets destroyed before they manage to do so. Which, by the way, stupid thing, should have uploaded it before.
Yeah, they have the technology.
Make a copy before.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they fight, which is a nice, like, it's a fun fight. It's a cool fight. But at the end of it, Nimona basically saves a kid and then goes back to her kid form that she had when she first met Glorious, and is like trying to reassure the kid, who obviously say, like, consider her as a monster.
Right.
And after that, like, they go back to their lair with Ballister, and Ballister basically decides to leave with Nimona to go outside the wall because it's like, you're right, no matter what we do, we can change the way people see us. And then Nimona said, you changed the way you see me, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I do like that balance. That scene with the kid kind of was sad for me.
Yeah.
It led to, like, that quote is just so fucking sad, like, did you see the way that little girl looked at me? Little kids, they grow up believing they can be a hero if they drive a sword into the heart of anything different. And I'm the monster? I don't know what's scarier. The fact that everyone in this kingdom wants to run a sword to my heart, or that sometimes I just want to let them.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I think, is the most tear-jerking line, I think. Yeah. Everybody wants to run a sword through my heart. Sometimes I want to let them. Like... Yeah, that makes me sad.
Yeah, it's a few days ago, so we had already decided to record about Nimona today.
Uh-huh.
But a few days ago, there's a video from Rowan Ellis. I don't know if you know her. She does a lot of YouTube video about queer media in general. And she had a video about queer villains and, like, I think the title was like Queer Villains and the Death of Media Literacy. The Death of Media Literacy, which made me laugh.
Right.
And she was mentioning Nimona, and she had a quote when she was saying, just as queerness has often been subject to the debate of nature versus nurture, Nimona asks, are monsters born or made? And if they're made, who is responsible for the havoc that they wreak? And it's a good video, by the way. If,
okay.
You should check it out. And yeah, that I love that movie, but it's a slap.
It's a slap. Yeah, I just really love... I don't know. I get so caught up in like the background lore of it all. Like, the entire backstory is kind of fucked. The protectors of the realm have to be descendants. And then it took 1,000 years for that to be rectified, only for them to, like, only for the director to be like, no, I'm going to kill the entire queen to preserve the bloodline that she isn't even part of. It's just...
I mean, I think she's a noble.
Okay, well, regardless, she's fucked up.
Oh, yeah, she's completely fucked up. But, like, she framed Ballister because she was afraid that letting a commoner become a knight would lead to the end of the kingdom. But by doing that, she pretty much, like, caused that ending.
Yeah, I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, or a self-fulfilling, it's just, the director is really...
Yeah.
The director is the real villain of the show, but also, Glorath has a lot to account for, I think. If what Glorath did is true, if, and that's a very big if.
Yeah, I feel like everything was built on a lie. So I'm not even sure how much Glorath has a part in all of that. I just like Glorath, so I'm like defending her, but maybe I'm wrong and maybe she turned a bitch. She could totally have turned out a bitch.
I love both.
Because, like, I mean, she's just a kid. It's so easy to be, like, it would be so easy for her parents to manipulate her. Like, she already fought a monster, so of course she's going to make, no, she has a destiny of fighting monster, and no, everyone needs to be protected because what if the monster come back?
Right, and that's the thing. Like, what if the monster comes back? What are they going to do? Like, it's just really fucked up, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I found my favorite Todd line. My favorite Todd line is about the fat unicorn, the thing with the horn that broke everything. And then Ambrosia says, "You mean rhinoceros?" And Todd says, "If I meant rhinoperus, I would have said rhinoperus."
It's so good.
It's normally those jokes don't get me, but like that got me.
It's I really liked also like the discussion about the otter. So then an otter comes around the corner and it bit me. And like there's a debate about whether it's a sea otter or a river otter. And then at some point the otter, like Nimona, shapeshift again as an otter. And somebody is like, "Oh yeah, I could see why you were confused. It has the tail of."
Yeah, I love that.
The tail of a sea otter. Yeah, it was so random and very funny. Yeah. Do we have a lot more to say?
I mean, do we think Nimona is alive? Obviously, Nimona is alive, I think, at the end.
Yes, she's alive. She's alive.
Don't
know how she can die. Which is a sad thing to think about. So I'm trying not to think about the after. Yeah.
I mean, I love seeing Ambrosius and Ballister kiss at the very end. Like, that made my heart happy.
Oh, yeah.
I also thought Eugene Lee Yang did a really good job, like, voicing the character Ambrosius.
Yeah.
Because it's very much his style, I think, of, like, a little flamboyant, pompous character. Like, he plays that really well. And I also love, at the very end, there's that scene of them looking at the wall that has all the Nimona tributes. And Nimona is written by N.D. Stevenson. Like, they're the artist. He, like, drew the original cover of how Nimona looks in the comic books in there.
Yeah, I saw that too. It's like the big picture on that wall is that note to the comic. I thought that was cute.
It was really cute. And I think he also did the, like, We Love Nimona one or some... that one that they pick up off the ground.
Maybe. That's possible. That does look familiar.
It looks like something that he would do a little bit. But he also had the other one, so I don't know.
Yeah. Did you see... I think it's when the movie came out, Andy released a few other comic about Ambrosius and Ballister on Twitter.
No, I didn't see that. I need to look them up.
I need to send it to you because it's like it just is cute. Is it's Ambrosius and Ballister basically as dads for Nimona, something like that.
Oh, that makes sense.
And he's like, oh,
that makes me happy.
Yeah, I just wish that last scene we would see Nimona. But I know that there's a purpose for not showing Nimona, but still, I just wanted to see her again.
Right. I think I liked the ambiguity of it. Like, Nimona's obviously alive. It's a different voice, I think.
No, it's the same voice.
It sounded different to me.
Really? I didn't notice anything.
I have it up in another tab right now. Let me just listen to it really quick.
I have it somewhere. So.
Okay, it's a much quieter voice, I think. So maybe it's just like a tired voice. I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I do think it's still the same voice actress.
Right. I think it is.
Maybe she's recovering because it did seem like she exploded. I'm pretty sure she exploded and then her body came back together, something like that.
Right, like it took a few weeks to reform.
Yeah, she's unkillable.
She is immortal, which is sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really love Ambrosius and Ballister. I think they're a really, really cute couple.
Yeah, and they have some good moments in the movie, and it's a nice ending for the two of them. It's
a nice ending because they're not the main characters. They're very much side characters, but at the same time, we get very invested in their story. So
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, they're not the title characters. They're still. I feel like there's three main characters. Brush is a bit less than Ballister, but Ballister is still very much important to the story. But yeah, gosh, I'm rereading a quote from the director and I really hate her. Like, I see what it really is, and so did Cloris. That monster is a threat to our very way of life. And what if we're wrong? And what if we've always been wrong? It's funny because the director, it's very much about we had a way of life and this thing is threatening it. And it's so much like every conservative talks about minorities, about immigration, about queer people, about this kind of thing. Is like, this is like, it's when gay marriage was legalized, was, oh, this is gonna threaten the sacrament of the wedding. And
right, yeah,
it's some people would rather live surrounded by wall then accept that some other people can be different, and that's fine.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it was just a really, really good film overall, and it made me really happy to see. And I agree with the, what was the name of the person that funded it? Megan Ellison?
Yeah.
I agree that it was like the message or the movie I needed to see growing up. So I get very happy when I see movies like this aimed towards kids, because it's nice to just see casual queerness and have it be just casual and never talked about, ever.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I never want queerness to be talked about. I just want it to be. And that's what we're kind of all fighting for.
It's Sheeran, the Princess of Power, that was that too. And that made my heart so, so warm. It never was about queerness. It was like the conflict is not about the queerness.
Right.
I mean, with Nimona, I feel like the conflicts definitely has some LGBT similarities.
Yeah.
Because it's like being different from the rest of the world. But yeah, it's a good movie. Everyone should watch it. Anything else to end, or should we?
No, I think that's good. As always, thank you for listening to The Queers of Time. We are a gay podcast that talks about the Wheel of Time, but also talks about, like, you know, other stuff like Nimona. And we do author interviews and maybe other interviews. Who knows? If you would like to connect with us, we're on Twitter and Discord mainly. And you can listen to us anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you can leave reviews, I don't know why things are dumb and you can't always leave reviews, but whatever. Is that it? Oh, and also support us on Patreon. We're almost done paying off the podcast. It's been 2 years. We're almost done. We're almost done.
I'm sorry to tell you that, but we still have a bit before having to renew Riverside. It's been August, so
yeah, we have time. If we can get caught up by August, which is a little after 2 years, I think I'm happy with that. I don't need to make money off of this podcast. Every cent we make from Patreon goes back into the podcast. Like, we don't make money from this at all.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. If you're at JordanCon, wait, does this come out before or after JordanCon?
after, during. Oh, let me check. Let me check. Right before. The Monday before.
Perfect. So if you're at JordanCon, please come see us for stickers. That would be absolutely amazing. Just mention that you're a fan of the podcast and one of us will have stickers on us. We are all four going to be there. We also plan on doing a live episode there somehow. We're still figuring that out. That'll be fun. But we got this.
Yes. I still have bookmarks.
Okay, sweet.
From 2 years ago. So that'll bring. So that.
Sweet.
Okay. Bye.
Awesome. Bye.
Thank you all for listening. This was Queers of Time, a Wheel of Time podcast. The music is Dance of the Witches by Julius H.